This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in. Another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray, joined as always on Mondays by Adam Burke. Hey, Adam, how's it going?
Things
are good, right?
I see that for those who are watching us on video, I see you're rocking the Washington Nationals shirt today. So I guess based on what happened with Notre Dame, football season's over for you and you moved on to baseball?
Yeah, we're moving on. We said we don't need a Pop-Tarts bowl and all of that. So, we'll get to the situation. Look, as I've said the past couple weeks, this is a betting podcast. So Notre Dame is not a bettable option moving forward for the rest of the season. So we should not really discuss Notre Dame, but we will briefly hit on that. If you're a loyal listener to the program, I think you're aware of my allegiances and my fandom to that program. I actually do have a good story on the happiness hedge. So we will get to that and maybe the answer of does money give you happiness? But just a reminder to continue to rate, review, and subscribe. We're not going anywhere. We're going to bowl season and we will be with you all throughout the bowl season, all throughout college football playoff. Just a reminder, I'm going to do the drawing here, I think on Wednesday. So maybe we'll announce some winners on Wednesday for our giveaways. If you are new or haven't been around, we've gotten a bunch of emails. Appreciate all of you guys emailing us. I've decided, Adam, so we have the Timmy Chang giveaway helmet here. We had so many people chiming in for T-shirts and hats. We don't have a ton of inventory, but I am going to add one more gift, another mini helmet. But it is not signed, okay? So it is not signed, but another Hawaii mini helmet. So two Hawaii mini helmets. We got a couple of Rainbow Authentics hats, a bunch of T-shirts. So the email is cfbpod@vsin.com, cfbpod@vsin.com. Send us a note that you want to be in the drawing. Send us the size of your T-shirt. We have a 2X, a couple XLs, and a couple larges as well. So I'll randomize it all and get that out. I'll announce some winners and email you guys on Wednesday. But cfbpod.
Did we give all the smediums away to Wyatt Tomchek? Is that why we don't have any of those?
I didn't get sent any smediums. I think I gave Mr. Tomchek, our producer, as well as Ryan Hunter, one of our Rainbow Authentics hats. So that is the giveaway, and much appreciated to all of you. Just a little appreciation on this season. All right. Sunday came and went, and you want me to start with the happiness hedge angle or just my overall thoughts, Adam? You tell me. Choose my own adventure. I was reading a Choose My Own Adventure story to my kid last night. Where should I go?
Well, I'll tell you what. Given that my voice sounds so bad, I'll let you rant as long as you want to.
Well, I think I'm going to disappoint people. I know people are expecting me to go full-on Jerry Maguire and freak out. There's not a lot of freaking out to do. I've stated it for a couple of weeks, and I tweeted it out on Sunday. Notre Dame really only has themselves to blame to being in this situation. The schedule was not that difficult. They lost two games. They lost to Miami. I think why Notre Dame and their fans were so upset was because of how it all played out. The committee is a joke, and Kirk Herbstreit even said as much on the show on Sunday. And I thought Reese Davis did a decent job as well of kind of pushing Juracek with some questions. If you're going to jump Miami over Notre Dame, I've stated it all along here. I actually don't have a problem with that decision. Do it on Tuesday. Everything was in the barn on Tuesday. Notre Dame had played all their games. Miami had played all their games. You had all the data. Jump them there. That's fine with me. But you waited until Sunday after a weekend where, honestly, Adam, it kind of felt like everything played into Notre Dame and maybe even Miami's hands. I mean, Alabama was non-competitive in that game. They had 70 yards in the first half. And that looked like a team that, remember, was behind Notre Dame for 2 weeks and then jumped them because of a win over 5-7 Auburn because of a gutsy call on fourth down, or because they had a 17-0 lead. But the committee, who dropped SMU two spots last year, but they still got in after they lost the ACC championship, said they could not drop Alabama. Once Alabama popped up on the nine line, Adam, I was like, it's over. I thought it was done right there. And sure enough, it was. So my problem not really is not with the decision to put Miami. It's just the committee and how they backed themselves into the corner for all of this process. And also, it's a bone to pick with the ACC. We've discussed it too. Their tie-break process was idiotic. They had five teams tied at 6-2. Miami was one of those teams. They were the highest ranked team. And the American goes with the highest ranked team to break those tiebreaks if you can't go to head-to-head, which clearly you can't when you've got five teams tied. Ultimately, they go with Duke. Duke wins the game because, of course, and they get left out. James Madison gets in. So, you know, I think as a fan, Adam, I'm bummed. I think this is the best team Notre Dame's had, ironically, since 1993 when they infamously lost to Boston College after beating Florida State. You know, Danny Cannell oddly forgets that the championship ring that he has was a situation in which the team they lost to got left out of the national championship. It's kind of funny how that works. But, you know, it stinks. And I think, too, and Adam, I imagine this is the point that you'll make from a gambling standpoint. They're leaving out one of the best teams in college football. You know, it depends on how you want to figure this thing out. Is it metric based? Is it resume based? I think that's the thing where we don't know where the answers come from, because if it's resume based, okay, Alabama, Oklahoma, they get in. Miami head to head over Notre Dame, fine. But if it's metric based, if it's BCS style, if it's like what we used to have, and I know Bill Conley's been tweeting about it, then Notre Dame's in, and it's no doubt. I mean, FanDuel put up odds for the projected first round games or what we thought they would be on Sunday morning, Adam, and Notre Dame was a 5.5-point favorite over Oklahoma. But they're not in. Miami's in. Alabama and Oklahoma, we get a rematch. And, you know, that's the way it is. So, you know, we can get to the bowl thing a little bit later, too. I don't know. I'm not going to get all fired up, man. There are a lot of takes from people, Adam, out there who tell us every bowl season that no one should play in these games. Their exhibitions are meaningless. But then when Notre Dame decides not to play in a bowl game, they bring out the takes of, well, they're quitters. What precedent does this set? How dare they do this, et cetera, et cetera. So, yeah, there you go. I don't know if that disappointed folks, but it's a bummer. I think Notre Dame had a real chance to win the national championship. But at the end of the day, they lost their two most important games and they got left out.
Well, I guess I can be mad for you here if you want me to be, because I just, like, again,
let me jump in real quick. Why is Alabama getting a pass? Because they beat Georgia. I mean, they won the game on September 27th. They also lost by two touchdowns to Florida State. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing. And also, what really got me agitated, and I thought Joey Galloway actually did a pretty good job about it, Juracek said he asked the committee to go rewatch Notre Dame Miami. So you're telling me they had not, are they not doing their homework? Like, I think everything about the committee is just a joke. I mean, that's what it comes down to. And the television show, we know why it's on. It's for eyeballs. It's a soap opera. But they should really do what college basketball does. You know, people are pissed off on Selection Sunday, but we don't know the whole entire process. You know, there's some great bracketologists out there who have good projections on it. But the Alabama thing is confusing to me, because I looked it up, Adam. Going back to 2014 and removing those first 3 years where the Big 12 didn't have a championship game, they just, like, played extra games in that final week, I believe 49 teams dropped for losing championship games in the rankings. 10 stayed the same, and actually 2 jumped. The performance we saw from Alabama, to me, proved that they shouldn't be in the playoff. They are a team, and now they'll probably go beat Oklahoma, and Alabama fans will tell me to go bleep myself, but, like, that was a terrible performance. They didn't play well against Auburn, Adam. This has not been a football team that is playing well. And for some reason, they're not getting punished for the worst loss by a long stretch of anyone that's in the field of 12.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with anything that you said. I mean, you know, this seems very politically driven in terms of the fact that, you know, Alabama and the SEC is in bed with ESPN and ABC and, you know, the Disney family of networks and all of that. So they want Alabama in. Maybe this is an FU to Notre Dame for not being in a conference, because I mentioned this, you know, the College Football Playoff Selection Committee, just about everybody has some sort of conference affiliation. And that's why they're on, you know, that board for deciding the College Football Playoff. Notre Dame doesn't have one. And what's really ironic is we talked about this last year in terms of Notre Dame, of like, why would you join a conference? You get to pick your own schedule. You know, you do play a lot of ACC teams and stuff like that. And you have some, you know, rivalry games that you play on an annual basis, like USC and things of that sort. But like, why would you join a conference? You don't have to worry about a conference championship game and all of that. And then this year, the committee basically said, well, you should probably join a conference because, you know, all these networks have all these tie-ins with these conferences and all that. And Notre Dame is just an orphan playing on NBC more often than not. So, you know, I think that that was kind of a big driving force here. And again, I mean, look, this is not about the student athletes. This is not about necessarily the accolades and the achievements that these teams have. Like you said, this is a TV show. This is about dollars and cents. This is about making all of these big sponsors happy and keeping network executives happy and all of that. Because look, when push comes to shove, I think there are four, maybe five teams that can win it all. Notre Dame would have been one of them. Mm-hmm. And they're not in this thing. And, you know, I have them as the fourth best team in the country on my power ratings behind Texas Tech, Indiana, and Ohio State. So Notre Dame should be in. And especially for Alabama to perform the way that they did against a team that they beat. Remember, last week I sat here and said Texas Tech didn't belong in the playoff if they lost to BYU because it would cancel out their second best win of the season. Well, Alabama canceled out arguably their best win of the season by a large margin, and they're still in. And I really, truly don't understand it. They could have lost to a South Carolina team that went 4-8. They could very well have lost to Auburn, who had an interim head coach, no bowl prospects, nothing to really play for. Like, this Alabama team is not impressive. And Notre Dame, sure, you can say they lost those two games way back in, you know, August and September, but they've been thoroughly impressive since. So the committee got this one very wrong. And let's go with a little bit of a sidebar here, too. The committee wants, and I think they're right for understanding this to a degree, the committee would love, to some degree, to have a Cinderella story like March Madness does, right? That's what makes March Madness so compelling. When you get these very small schools that go and beat these big schools in the first round or the second round, something like that. But then you get to the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight, the Final Four, and you realize why those teams don't really belong there. Nothing against James Madison. They've had a phenomenal season, right? Bob Chesney's done a great job the last 2 years. They could have really gone in the tank after Kurt Cignetti left. They didn't do that. They've been really, really good. But they are a three-touchdown underdog to Oregon. And stranger things have happened, right? I mean, we've seen big upsets and stuff like that. But I really think we should just have a group of five playoff. Eight teams, five conference champions, and then three at-larges. One versus eight, two versus seven, three versus six, four versus five. Play it out from there. Play it on the home campus sites. Like, it's cool that these teams get to be there, but I mean, I'd much rather see a Notre Dame that has a chance of winning a title than seeing a James Madison get beat by three touchdowns, or a Tulane play a team that they already lost to by 35 points during the regular season and got horribly outgained in that game. Like, maybe Tulane wins. I don't know. I guess it's possible, but yeah, they should just have a separate group of five playoff. Like, forcing a group of five team in there, it doesn't line up, especially if you're going to play this politics game of letting in, you know, a team like Alabama who doesn't deserve it over Notre Dame.
Well, once again, you go back to the ACC and how they handled their tiebreak scenario. I mean, this whole thing is moot if Miami plays Virginia on Saturday night, wins the tiebreaker like the American, and then Notre Dame's the 11 seed. Miami's maybe higher because they would have won the ACC, so maybe they jump to 9 or 8, whatever it would have been. And, you know, and then we're looking at a pretty appealing bracket here. Notre Dame's at Ole Miss. You know, Tulane is at Oregon, but you know, if it's in butts or candy and nuts, the world would be a better place. So, you know, I'm not going to scream and yell that, you know, you lost two games, and their schedule at the end of the day for Notre Dame, it wasn't great, right? And, you know, I'd be curious what's going to happen with this ACC agreement moving forward. There's a lot of, you know, people yelling that the ACC bends over backwards for Notre Dame. I would vehemently disagree. I think the benefits for the ACC with Notre Dame way outweigh, in my opinion, the benefits that Notre Dame gains from the ACC. But regardless, Miami's in, and I have no issue with Miami being in. They were playing really good football since they had their two losses. Down the stretch, they played really good football. I was at the game in August when Notre Dame lost to Miami. I don't think they got their ass kicked like Nick Saban indicated on College Game Day. It was a 24-24 game, and Miami kicked a 40-plus yard field goal to win it. But Miami was the better team. I don't disagree. They were the better team on that Sunday. And Notre Dame, their defense was a disaster against Texas A&M. Botched a hold on an extra point. Texas A&M with SEC officials, might I add, got away with a blatant hold on a fourth and goal that won them the game. But hey, that's football, and that's the way it all played out. As for the bowl thing, I don't need to get into it. I mean, they would have been a bet against team, in my opinion. That's for sure. And I think here's the scenario, Adam. I'll be quick on it with the bowl thing. Notre Dame opting out of a bowl. They would have gone to the Pop-Tarts Bowl. They would have played BYU. It actually would have been a pretty enticing matchup. It would have been the two teams, the two highest ranked teams that didn't get in to the playoff. But, you know, when their whole if on Tuesday Miami was ahead of Notre Dame, or if BYU beat Texas Tech on Saturday, I think Notre Dame's in a bowl game. I think the whole way everything played out, and then Sunday comes, and then you're basically kicked in the fellas the whole time, and then you're asked, hey, do you want to go play in a bowl game? It's like, no, I don't want to play in a bowl game. And I saw some reporters say this happened to Georgia a couple years ago. I'm like, no, no. Georgia lost the SEC championship, and we all knew they were going to be out of the Final Four. The team that got screwed that year was Florida State, and they lost by 60 points to the same Florida, the same Georgia team. So I think that's the difference of the whole matter. But yeah, I don't know, man. We got bowl games. We got a playoff to get to. Any final thoughts on what unfolded on Saturday or Sunday?
No, I'm curious to see what, if anything, changes going forward. You know, I mean, do we see the ACC do the smart thing and kind of revamp their tiebreakers in hopes that maybe this doesn't happen again? What does this mean going forward for non-conference scheduling, where, you know, a lot of coaches now are like, well, I got to play 9 conference games, so I'm not going to worry about who I play in the non-conference. You know, are we going to lose some of those more marquee matchups early on? And I will say this too, with the whole strength of schedule argument, right? Like, the non-conference games are set far in advance, several years in advance. Like, Ohio State's got games booked out to like 2031 or 2032, something like that. Look, with the transfer portal, with the way that roster turnover happens, the way these coaches can just go wherever they want to, like, you may schedule a game that looks very promising, but by the time you get to that game, it isn't. And that's not, to me, that's not your fault. Like, there's nothing you can really do about that if another program kind of goes into a nosedive or something. The other thing I think I would do, and this will never happen, but I talked about this last week on the show, I think I would go back to divisions in all these conferences, but I would basically reevaluate at the end of every season who is in which division, right? Because the travel things don't really matter anymore. They're not that important. Travel's pretty easy to do, and now you've got all these cross-country conferences anyway. But, like, the top team is in Division A, right? The number two team is the top team in Division B. Number three team is in Division A. Number four team is in Division B, stuff like that. And you just reanalyze it every year, try to make them as balanced as possible, and then, you know, just kind of go from there, and that's your conference championship game. Like, there are ways to do this that, I don't know, it just seems like people don't really want to do. And, you know, I mean, we know that we're going to continue to see a Big Ten and SEC bias going forward, and just kind of is what it is, and those are probably the two best conferences in the country by a large, large margin. But I don't know. There seems to be a better way that keeps it from being as arbitrary as it is, because right now it's just people that can manipulate a data set and a narrative in any way that they want to.
Yeah. I mean, I think at this point, and I don't know if our listeners would agree or even care, because this is a betting podcast, but Feels like just the way, and I think Bill Conley made this point over the weekend, it's like the numbers have gotten so much better from where we were in the BCS era. Just go back to the computers deciding this thing. But, you know, maybe that's a disgruntled Notre Dame fan wanting his team in. So we will obviously get into the playoff. But I did want to tell a quick story about the happiness hedge. I woke up on Sunday morning. You know, on Saturday, I'll say this, Adam. Everything kind of played out the way that I thought it would for Notre Dame, or at best, right? And I love Georgia in the spot. I didn't understand the market move against them. I guess it was the Bobo injury, but I mean, they dominated that game. There was no doubt they were the better team. I actually thought Kirby kind of took his foot off the gas a little bit, especially at the end of the first half. I was a bit odd by that, or off put by that. But I woke up and I had bet, because we've talked about it on the podcast, I thought Notre Dame's number to make the playoff was too high. And I bet some no, and I bet some Miami to make the playoff. And then on Sunday morning, Adam, I woke up and I was excited, man. I was thinking about Notre Dame going to Oklahoma, and then maybe they'd be in the Rose Bowl against Indiana. And I saw that the number to miss was like plus 880 or something like that. So I made a call to someone back east, and I said, hey, just put a little bit down here. So the question is, does the happiness hedge help? Not really. I did win some money, but I'm pretty bummed still. So I guess it made it a little bit better. I mean, it would have been worse if I didn't have anything on it. But the happiness hedge, it doesn't make me feel a ton better, but I did like, you know, the cash that I did receive for winning that bet.
Yeah, I think now you just have to sit here and hope that you don't lose Marcus Freeman to the NFL.
I know. Well, yeah, that's New York. If Pittsburgh opens up, so who knows how it's all going to play out.
Although the Steelers are going to be over 500 again and win the division. So
yeah, well, I think the Sunday result, the early Sunday result was devastating. The later Sunday result of the Steelers beating the Ravens maybe was good for Notre Dame. By the way, if you're wondering, at 11:36 a.m. Eastern time on Sunday morning, Notre Dame was minus 3,000 at FanDuel to make the playoff. Alabama was minus 260. Miami plus 156. So there were no leaks coming out of that room, apparently.
Yeah. We can have a much longer discussion over the offseason about prediction markets and the manipulatability, whatever, of those things. But yeah, it would have been interesting to kind of watch that market in real time too, as we were kind of figuring out who was going to be in this thing. So
yeah, I actually did a log, Adam, from when Georgia went up 14-0, I charted the whole market and, you know, Notre Dame and Alabama and Miami's odds as it all played out. And the lowest Alabama got I saw was around minus $3 on when they went down 21-0 after the third quarter, where they had 103 total yards. Looked like FanDuel was minus $3, Notre Dame was minus 1,200, and Miami plus 146. So I was charting it during the game because I was bored. I was just watching the game and seeing how it all play out. But Alabama's in, rematch of Oklahoma, Miami gets Texas A&M, Oregon gets James Madison. Stormy, by the way, will be on the sidelines for that, so excited for her. That'll be one of the TNT games. And then we get Ole Miss and Tulane. So let's do this. Let's take a quick break. When we come back on the other side, let's talk a little bit on the college football playoff bracket. A couple bowl thoughts that I've got as well. And we also have Army-Navy, the final regular season game on Saturday. So quick break. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. All right, we're back. It is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. As always, CFBpod at VSiN.com. If you want to be entered to win part of the giveaways that we got going on, just a thank you to you guys. But Adam, a whole lot going on over at VSiN.com. I know you're going to be very busy, especially with the college football playoff starting next week.
Yeah, first thing I'll say, Timothy, make sure you check your VSiN email. because I have a request, because we need best bets from our hosts and our top contributors here, because our college football playoff betting guide comes out Thursday, December 11th over at vsin.com. And also, you know, we're going to do something different for this one in that we're going to sell it a la carte. So we're going to sell it as a standalone product for $14.99. So if you don't want to be a VSIN Pro subscriber, right, you don't want that recurring charge. I know a lot of people have a million subscriptions now, Apple Music, Spotify, all the streaming services, all these kinds of things. Maybe you don't want another subscription, and that's fine, but you can still get your hands on this guide for $14.99 over at vsin.com. We want to see how that works out for us, what kind of interest we can drum up with a standalone product. We did that for the Breeders' Cup in terms of some picks from our horse racing experts. Went over pretty well, so now we're going to try it with kind of a a betting market that has a lot more widespread interest in college football. So we're going to be doing that, but also we still have our $9.99 introductory offer for your first month as a VSIN Pro subscriber. We have our holiday special coming up as well. People are going to realize now that college basketball is going and has been going for about a month. So you get Greg Peterson's daily article with that. And if you're an action junkie, Greg Peterson is the person for you, because he finds a way to bet on at least 10 college basketball games a night, typically more. So check that out over at vsin.com, along with everything else that we have to offer.
Thanks again to Rainbow Authentics, our friends over there who have been part of this podcast all year long and will be with us through the bowl season as well. Hawaii will be playing in the Hawaii Bowl on Christmas Eve against Cal. Should be a fun one. Good news for Cal. JKS, Jaron Chiave Sangapulateli, is coming back next year. So exciting news there for the Cal Golden Bears. But also, just a reminder, Lou Groza finalist Kansei Matsuzawa is taking his precision and power to the closet with his Tokyo Toe apparel. Bold design, premium comfort, and 100% fan energy. Whether you're tailgating or tuned in, represent greatness. Visit TokyoToe.com. TokyoToe.com. That is where what the winners wear. Best nickname in college football, the Tokyo Toe?
I would say so. For those who don't know the story, I mean, it's an incredible story. And also, this kid's missed one kick all season long, 25 of 26 on field goals, 37 for 37 on extra points. What an incredible story. And I got to say, it does kind of make you wonder how some of these premier programs just can't seem to find guys that can make kicks, because I'm not going to get into the Ohio State thing. Good Lord. Ryan Day. That was like old Ryan Day with the decision-making late in that game and everything that kind of played out. But it's crazy to me the way that some of these premier teams can't find kickers. And here's Hawaii with maybe the best kicker on the on the college football planet.
I know. Yeah, it is. It's an incredible story. Came to the forefront week zero with the game-winning kick against Stanford, and now an opportunity to win a big-time award. So shout out to our friends over at Rainbow Authentics, of course, and TokyoToe.com. All right, Adam, we do have a playoff. It will be played. Ohio State gets the 3 seed after losing, actually the 2 seed, I beg your pardon, after losing on Saturday night to Indiana.
Another thing I don't understand, by the way, like, why would you want Georgia and Ole Miss in the Sugar Bowl? Like, those two teams are in the same conference. Like, you see that game. Why not just put Georgia on the 2 line? I mean, I guess Texas A&M's there anyway, but why not put Georgia on the 2 line and take Ohio State down to 3? I mean, they did lose their conference championship game.
Well, you can't penalize teams for losing unless it's BYU.
Okay. That makes more sense.
So for those who do not know, New Year's Day, it'll be Indiana versus the winner of Alabama, Oklahoma in the Rose Bowl. Texas Tech on New Year's Day will get the winner of Oregon, James Madison. The Sugar Bowl, New Year's Day, Ole Miss, Tulane winner. And then Ohio State, shades of, what was that, 2 years ago when they lost to Georgia on New Year's Eve, Adam?
Yeah, I was actually flying back to Vegas because I had been home visiting family. And right as the clock struck midnight, basically, for the start of the new year, the kick that never had a prayer missed wide left by, I don't know, 100 feet or more.
Yeah, it was not all that close, but Ohio State will be playing on New Year's Eve against the winner of A&M and Miami. So looking at the games in the first round, Alabama right now, depending on where you look, it's a pick 'em at Circa. They're a slight favorite. Some other shops. Total is hilariously low, which doesn't surprise me. 40.5 right now. Discuss where Alabama's at from how they've been playing. It's not like Oklahoma, Adam, has been playing all that well either. The defense is nasty, though. There's no denying that, and that's the reason they won the game that they played earlier this season. So Friday night, December 19th, I'll get it right, in Norman, early thoughts on Alabama, Oklahoma.
So this is another element of the committee that pisses me off. So, you know, they're giving Oklahoma or they're giving Alabama the chance to avenge one of their losses here, right? And it is a game where Ty Simpson threw for 326. Alabama outgained Oklahoma by nearly 200 yards. An 87-yard pick six really changed the complexion of the game, right? Because it was at least a 10-point swing in all likelihood, probably a 14-point swing. And then, you know, Oklahoma was able to hang on. They did trail entering the fourth quarter, kicked a field goal, and the defense really showed up there. But, you know, again, if you look at the box score for this game, right, Alabama minus three in turnovers. Alabama, like I said, outgained them by almost 200 yards. Still had a chance to win the game. Still only lost 23-21. Yeah, we shift to Norman now for this one, but this feels by design, right? Because the committee knew people were going to be pissed off that Alabama got in. So what do? They give Alabama a chance against a team they already played and outgained by 200 yards. And yeah, you get the change of venue, but like, I don't know, man. John Mateer has not looked good since he came back from the injuries. So it's just bothersome that we get this matchup here to me. And it's the first game of the playoff. I mean, I don't really care about either team. I don't really care about either fan base. But at this point, I'm just rooting for Oklahoma to win because I want the committee to get what they deserve for putting Alabama in. And that's Alabama leaving in the first round.
Yeah, I kind of think
Alabama. But by the way, from a betting standpoint, my line is Alabama minus one for what
it's worth. I lean Alabama. I have not bet this game yet. That would be my early thought on this one. But I don't know how. I mean, you look at that offense and it is just so broken right now, you know, and if they're going to go against a tenacious defense, look, I think Oklahoma stinks offensively right now, but their defense is as nasty as any defense in the country, maybe the best defense in the country. So that's why you have a total as low as it is. And that's why Oklahoma games have continued to be pretty much low scoring outside of that Ole Miss game for most of the year. But always worry about the pick sixes, right? When you look at a total like that, the other game.
Do you think Ty Simpson's hurt?
He seems that way, doesn't he?
He doesn't seem right, right? Like, I saw a clip on Twitter of a hit that he took in the Missouri game, and he was bent all kinds of weird ways. I can't believe there aren't more injuries in football when you watch some of these replays and all of that. I mean, that game was a long time ago, but he's got to be playing through something, and I don't know what it is necessarily, but you know, I mean, he's looked really bad the last couple of weeks. So I don't know. Hopefully both of these quarterbacks can kind of get it in form a little bit here with a little bit of extra downtime, not a ton. But, you know, I mean, Mateer coming back, I don't want to say prematurely because, I mean, they cleared him. But with him coming back for the Red River rivalry game and what he's done since, he hasn't been the same player. Simpson doesn't look like the same player. Like, I don't know. I hope both of these guys are in a little bit better shape by the time this game rolls around.
Yeah, you look at how Alabama's been playing as of late, just some of Bill Conley's notes, right? You look at Georgia game, they got destroyed, 21-point loss. That was not fluky. They had a 0.2 post-game win expectancy. They had a 44% post-game win expectancy in that gutsy win over Auburn. They did have a 95% chance to beat Oklahoma, or they should have if you play that game out. So, yeah, we'll see how this plays out. I'm not super enthusiastic for the game, but it is a playoff game. It'll be a great atmosphere Friday night game down there in Oklahoma. The early game on Saturday is Miami and Texas A&M, so the Canes do get in. And they've been playing really good football. Texas A&M, the last time we saw them, Adam, they lose to Texas. So instead of, you know, getting the bye and going to the SEC championship game. They have a home game against Miami. Oddly enough, the two teams that beat Notre Dame are playing each other in the first round of the playoff here. Texas A&M right now, 3.5 or 4-point favorite, total 51.5.
Yeah, I'm this is the game I'm obviously most interested in.
Sure.
You know, I mean, Tulane and Ole Miss, like I said, we've seen this game already. James Madison and Oregon, whatever. This game really, really intrigues me because I think we can all agree Texas A&M has a pretty significant coaching advantage in this game, especially if this one's close and you get down into some late game situations of clock management and stuff like that. I think Texas A&M is well equipped for that. I think Texas A&M is a good team. I don't know that they're a great team, but I think both of these teams have the ceiling to be great in certain, you know, performances and stuff like that, where I think consistency has definitely been a factor for both of them. I know Texas A&M just lost the game to Texas and it was their first loss, but I mean, remember, they were getting blown out by South Carolina at home before Shane Beamer, I don't know what the hell that was on the second half of that game, but you know, Texas A&M has had their moments too, where you kind of wonder like, how good is this team? How good is Marcel Reed? You know, and for Miami, I mean, we know Miami's defense is always going to be good. Their defensive line is always going to be very stout. Same thing for Texas A&M. Is the mobility factor of Marcel Reed really the big difference in this game? Where Carson Beck is not a guy who's really going to run around a whole lot, kind of more of a pocket passer type of dude. I think what Marcel Reed can do, being kind of more of that dual threat type of dude, maybe neutralizes the Miami defensive line a little bit in this game. I do like Texas A&M in this one. I think this line should be maybe a little bit higher. But again, I mean, obviously all these lines are sharp, so it's just matchup, you know, type based handicapping. But I think because Texas A&M has more of the dual threat nature, I think that this matchup isn't that bad for them.
Yeah, I obviously, like you said, I think this is of the four, the most appealing of the four from, you know, a playmaker standpoint. Malachi Toney, I mean, I'm happy we're getting him in the playoff. That dude is a special, special player. Can Carson Beck avoid the catastrophic mistakes? Can he avoid the Louisville game, right? I mean, he's been playing pretty sharp, but I feel like they've been kind of keeping him under wraps a little bit. He made some dangerous throws. Thinking back to the, you know, dominant win over Notre Dame, he made some dangerous throws, but he got bailed out by his receivers, especially on the one-handed touchdown reception. But he played well in that game. He did. He really played well in that game. So this game by far to me is the most intriguing. You mentioned it already. We get Tulane and Ole Miss, a rematch of a game that we got earlier this year, which was a 45-10 throttling by Ole Miss over Tulane. They outgained them 548-282. Jake Retzlaff in that game, 5 of 17 for 56 yards. I think that was during the time where he and Brendan Sullivan were kind of splitting time, if I remember correctly. Trinidad Chambliss started that game and was fantastic. Kawan Lacey ran for 68 yards. But you've got the unique situation where Tulane's coach is leaving, John Summerall, but he's still coaching. But Lane Kiffin, as we all know, is gone. Charlie Weiss Jr. is back. Pete Golding is now the head coach. That's really the only weird part of this game. I mean, look, of the two G5 teams, I think Tulane probably has the best chance to compete, but I'm still not really racing to take 17 or 17.5, which is at DraftKings right now at Tulane.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be racing to take that either. And you know, look, I mean, I think that the way that Lane Kiffin left, obviously, you know, was messy, right? And was definitely a big story throughout the course of college, you know, throughout the college football landscape. At the same time, I think because of the way that it dragged out, the players were like, you know what, the hell with this guy? Like, we're done with this. And then they moved on to Pete Golding pretty quickly. That seemed to be a pretty popular decision here, you know, by the athletic department and by the university. So I think Mississippi, you talk about, you know, teams with a chip on their shoulders, right? I mean, yeah. Ole Miss has the biggest one here in this field just because there are going to be a lot of people who make that, you know, who create that narrative of like, well, Lane Kiffin's gone. Obviously, it's going to hurt when you lose your head coach. Maybe not. Right? Maybe it won't. And this is something I've referenced on the podcast quite a bit here. Ole Miss was really good at putting up a ton of yardage, but not a whole lot of points. And I don't know why. It was always some sort of weird, fluky thing. I mean, they played LSU 24-19 earlier this season, outgained them by like 250 yards or whatever it was. Like, this is what they kind of did under Lane at times. Maybe they don't do that under Pete Golding. So I give Tulane a lot of credit for being there. Winning the American was not easy. That was a very good conference for a group of five for this season. But the first game showed us how outclassed Tulane's probably going to be in this game. And I don't know that I see this one going a whole lot different. I mean, I'm right in line with the market at 16.5, but if I was to play it, it would be Ole Miss or nothing. The only thing that's a question is, like, because you know you have another game coming up, if you're Ole Miss and you're up 21, 24 in the second half, something like that, is Golding going to take his foot off the gas? Because that's obviously an unknown with a head coach that, you know, we haven't really seen in action.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the more unique discussion about the two games with the G5 teams is, does Ole Miss and Oregon continue to lay it on knowing that they have a game to come? And that leads us to Oregon taking on James Madison. And let me say this. I know a lot of people who went to James Madison. It's an awesome campus. It's an awesome, I've never been to a game there, but you saw game day, go there. They had an amazing season. You pointed this out earlier in the podcast. I don't have any interest of seeing them in the playoff, and I'm sure people will get mad at me for saying that. They didn't do anything wrong, right? The ACC did things wrong, and that's why James Madison is here. You didn't do anything wrong, right? Bob Chesney comes down there and does a phenomenal job, and he's going to UCLA now. I watched the whole game against Troy. Man, that was not impressive. You know, they got some defensive players that are certainly, you know, can make some plays, but you know me, Adam. I don't lay points more often than not. I laid 21 here. I did. I think Oregon likes to play the role of bully. And Oregon, even though they're five and they get the home game, I do think Dan Lanning, he plays up the nobody believes in us card pretty good. And I mean, I had my questions about Oregon this year, right? Their toughest game, they lose at home to Indiana. They, you know, they take care of business against USC. They beat Washington, but it's still like, yeah, okay, whatever. You're not Ohio State or Indiana. I have a hard time envisioning that offense for James Madison getting a lot going. I don't want to say this game's going to be reminiscent to the Fiesta Bowl a couple years ago where Liberty scored first and then Oregon scored 42 unanswered. James Madison's better than that Liberty team. They do have some guys that could be disruptive off the edges, but I just, if you're not getting home against Troy and their, you know, that their starting quarterback got hurt during that game, I think Dante Moore and these playmakers could have a field day against James Madison. So I actually laid the 21 here with the Ducks.
Yeah, so, you know, I did a spot on a numbers game here on Monday morning, and I made the comment that nobody wants to see James Madison. And somebody actually tweeted us at the VSiN account and said it was the worst take they've ever heard on VSiN Live.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Look,
I've said some stupid stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. I probably took the title from you. But look, like, again, the romanticism about March Madness, right? Everyone likes to see the Cinderella, you know, the really close games. Basketball and football are not the same sport, right? I mean, this is just, there's a lot more talent on the field for Oregon, bigger, stronger, faster dudes. Like, the imbalance of the NIL, you know, collective. I mean, Nike's obviously funding Oregon's program, as we know. Like, they're just far and away a better team. And maybe James Madison hangs around for a little bit, right? I guess that wouldn't surprise me. But Oregon should blow them out in this game. And also, you know, for Dan Lanning, right? You talk about teams with chips on their shoulders here. They got the bye last year in the playoff, and Ohio State completely thumped them. So, like, you know, I mean, if you're Dan Lanning, right, like, you can go back to that and be like, look, we got embarrassed last year.
Mm-hmm.
We got embarrassed in the playoff. We were one and done. We were embarrassed. So let's go out there and embarrass somebody else. And I think it's something that Oregon can absolutely do. My line is 19.5, but this is one of the difficult things about lining, you know, some of these bowl games specifically, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like,
good luck.
I've had James Madison priced against Sun Belt competition, where they've been laying massive numbers, right? So I have to adjust a little bit. I have to go up with my power rating to account for the fact that they're going to be a 20-plus point favorite in a lot of their Sun Belt games and stuff like that. But then when you have to shift back to ranking them in terms of the nation as a whole, it gets a little bit more challenging. So that's why I have this one 19 and a half. It is below market, but it would be Oregon or nothing for me here in this game, because I really truly do think that Lanning, you know, we kind of mentioned this with Mississippi, right? Will Ole Miss kind of keep their foot on the gas and look to blow out Tulane? Maybe, maybe not. I think that's precisely what Dan Lanning wants to do here to James Madison if he gets the chance.
Yeah, and, you know, the difference between, you know, people have brought it up. I saw a bunch of people make the point that, you know, Northern Illinois beat Notre Dame a year ago. True, they were a 28-point underdog, and they won that game. Notre Dame was also coming off the Texas A&M win, and when asked about who they were playing next week, Marcus Freeman didn't even know who they were playing, right? This is completely different. You're focused in on the college football playoff, and I think that's a really good point that you made. Oregon's last appearance in the playoff, they got waxed by Ohio State. So, yeah, I'm going to lay the 21 here. I already did, so we will see if Oregon takes it out on the Dukes for a night game. There's part of me, though, that wants it to be a competitive game because Stormy's going to be on the sidelines, so I want her to have a good game up there at Autzen Stadium. So excited, by the way, for our colleague. Super cool that she'll be on one of the broadcast teams for the college football playoff. That'll be the 7:30 game on TNT. Obviously, we got 2 weeks before that game, so we got plenty of time to break it down. A bunch of games to get to. I'm just going to bounce around a little bit in bowl season. Before we get there, Adam, Army-Navy. Navy now up to a 6-point favorite, total 39.5. If this gets to 7, I'm going to have to take Army. This rivalry, the way it plays out, you know, it's so cliche, but the records mean absolutely nothing. They run the same similar offenses. I won't say same offense. Navy has the better quarterback, no doubt, in Blake Horvath. They're the better team this year. You know, usually heading into this game, Adam, you could say that Navy's played the tougher schedule, and they have a little bit because they played Notre Dame in the non-con. But Army, this year, they're both in the American. I think Navy had a tougher road in the American. They had to play South Florida. They had to play Memphis. They obviously play Notre Dame in the non-con. Like I said, if this gets to 7, I'll probably jump in on Army small. But any thoughts on Army-Navy on Saturday in Baltimore?
Yeah, I mean, I make it 4.5 here. So I do think that the market has probably gotten a little bit high in this one. I mean, I think people are going to look at it kind of and say, you know, well, last year Army had Bryson Daly and they still got blown out in the game. And obviously they don't have a Bryson Daly this year. But again, you know, this is such a condensed game, a very low number of possessions both ways, you know, stuff like that. Maybe we have seen Navy throw the football a little bit more later on in the year than I think some people expected. You know, Drew Kronick with that offense, it has a lot of different looks. Maybe something that will be harder for Army to kind of account for, much like it was last year. I think it's the 7, you're right. It kind of almost feels like principle that, you know, a full touchdown, an extra point in this game is a lot more than it is in most other games. I probably won't play it, I don't think. But, you know, again, it is one of those games that I guess I'm a little bit annoyed. It's not a standalone game this year because we actually have a bowl game on Saturday.
Not at the same time, though. Later in the day.
Which is nuts, but yeah, at least they're at different times. I guess long story short, I lean Army, but I probably won't play the game.
All right, a couple bowl games, and we'll have plenty of time. And once again, just a reminder to go check out all of our bowl coverage. I do want to point out, though, it's funny to note, Army last year, as you mentioned, with Bryson Daly, closed a 6.5-point favorite, and now they're a 6.5-point underdog. So big move from last year to this year. Navy, as I mentioned, is better. Both Army and Navy are in a bowl game, and boy, Adam, you talk about immediate bets coming in on Army and Navy. How about Army opened up as a 3.5-point underdog against UConn in the Fenway Bowl? They are now 3-point favorites. Also, Navy opened up as, I want to say, 6.5-point underdogs against Cincinnati, and they are now 1.5-point underdogs. Without fail, Armed Services are phenomenal follows or teams to back in the betting market during bowl week. And there's a reason why those two teams have been absolutely smashed in the market for their two bowl games.
Yeah, absolutely. And the interim for UConn, their offensive coordinator. So, you know, I mean, who knows how much how good the prep's going to be for working against that option offense. Yeah, you know, look, I mean, this the bowl thing, it's I'm really, really curious to see what happens as we go forward here. Obviously, we've seen a ton of coach hirings already. You know, Charles Huff getting hired at Memphis here this morning. Jason Candle at UConn, which is not a good hire, in my opinion.
So weird.
God, I hate Tulane elevating Will Hall to the head coach. There have been some questionable head coaching decisions for sure here so far. But, you know, again, they pushed the transfer portal date back this year. So January 2nd is the transfer portal date. Now, last year was what, December 8th or 10th?
It was
10th
early, yes. Tons
it was
of players
ridiculous.
Opted out. Yeah.
So, like, we had a bunch of teams playing with half of a roster and all that kind of thing. Like, we still don't know what opt-outs are going to look like for a lot of these bowl games. Obviously, guys with NFL futures aren't going to play, you know, in all likelihood. But, man, it's hard to jump into these things early still. Even though the portal, you know, date has been pushed back, like, you still don't want to go out there and tear an ACL if you've got a few hundred thousand from the next team you're playing for or something like that. So, really curious to see what happens here. But the story usually remains the same, right? Teams that don't go to a lot of bowl games, they're going to be excited. They're going to be happy to go and play. Teams that had higher expectations for this season, you don't really know where they're going to be at from a mindset standpoint. Like Coastal Carolina named Jeremiah Johnson the interim head coach. He was Louisiana Tech's defensive coordinator last year. Coastal Carolina and Louisiana Tech play each other. Like, there's some, you know, kind of cool and weird, unique angles and stuff like that. But these things are a mess, my man. They're really tough to bet early on.
On the surface, a couple games that jumped out to me just from a level of intrigue. Friday the 19th, the Myrtle Beach Bowl. You get the Sun Belt champion, Kennesaw State. What a game that was, by the way. Or excuse me, the CUSA champion, beg your pardon. Kennesaw State, that was a great championship game against the MAC champ in Western Michigan. So I always like to see these teams get an opportunity against a big boy. Obviously, that's not going to happen. Also, the Boca Raton Bowl has been renamed to the Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans. So
all right.
That's pretty awesome. That's Toledo versus Louisville on the December 23rd. UNLV Ohio could be a fun one. I think for the most part, those teams will be relatively intact.
What a weird situation for Ohio, though, where they let Brian Smith, their head coach, go. And there was like no information whatsoever that came out about it. Like, it just all of a sudden happened. I think the players were just called into a meeting and they were like, yeah, so your head coach is gone. And everyone was just kind of like, what the hell? Like, yeah. What? And which would have been really interesting if Ohio had emerged from the tiebreaker for the MAC championship game, but instead it was Miami of Ohio who, you know, of course, lost to Western Michigan. But that's one that would worry me with Ohio, where, like, I have no idea what that team's mindset is right now. And for UNLV, I mean, I think Dan Mullen's going to want to go out there and win a bowl game. That's one where I do like UNLV, and I do agree with where that line is going here.
Yeah, I'd be curious. Anthony Calandria, got to imagine he probably will go portaling, but who knows?
Yeah.
In this day and age, if UNLV's got some cash, maybe they keep him. Obviously, the Hawaii Bowl, I think this will be a really fun one. Hawaii taking on Cal. Nick Rolovich will be coaching this game, which is kind of cool, against his former team where he went to school. He was the quarterback before Timmy Chang went to Hawaii. And then you've got JKS. He's staying. So that should be a good one. I actually took 3.5 when it showed on Hawaii because, of course, as their home dog, I have to take Hawaii. But that actually is a bowl game that intrigues me. I do like these spots a lot, Adam. December 26th. The Rate Bowl, Minnesota and New Mexico. So New Mexico, it looked like initially, based off of all the projections that were out there, that New Mexico would just play in the New Mexico Bowl, which I was like, oh, that kind of sucks for them. But they're going to go and play a Power Four team. If Jason Eck and this roster stays intact, I would lean towards the Lobos catching 3.5 against Minnesota.
Yeah, I like that one. I like that one a lot. You know, especially, you know, getting to kind of play at Chase Field there in Phoenix. Maybe you get some New Mexico fans making the trip from Albuquerque, especially because, like you said, I mean, they're usually just kind of resign to going to the same bowl game when they're actually bowl eligible. And, you know, actually having an opportunity to go somewhere else, I think is pretty cool. Another one, I guess we should mention, as I said, you know, Charles Huff was hired at Memphis. He brought like half of his Marshall team with him to Southern Miss.
Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious to know what the mindset of that team is right now as they take on Western Kentucky, a team that we know is going to spread it out, throw it around, to be able to do so, you know, in the Superdome in New Orleans, not have to worry about any weather conditions or anything like that. I'm intrigued by Western Kentucky in that spot. But I will say, you know, and I need to resurrect this article. I do it every year in terms of, you know, how teams do with an interim head coach. Sometimes teams really play for the interim head coach. If it's like a longtime assistant, sure, who's never been, you know, a head coach, something like that. You know, sometimes the teams really, really show up for that guy. So you definitely want to do your research. Reggie Howard is going to be the interim for Southern Miss in that game. I know nothing about him. I won't pretend to know anything about him. But you do sometimes get these spots where, you know, these teams really do go out there and play for an interim because they just simply love the guy. So we'll see. Keep that in mind. But again, I think the fact that Huff had such a strange exit from Marshall and brought half of his team, and now, like, what is, are all those guys going to follow him now to Memphis? I don't know. But like, that seems like a really difficult spot for Southern Miss in their bowl game.
Yeah. And speaking of Memphis, they're playing NC State. That's an early one. The Gasparilla Bowl, that'll be the lead in to the first playoff game. So they get in and out quickly. Memphis does this year in bowl season. BYU,
Washington State loses their head coach.
Yeah.
And they take on Utah State up in the Smurf Turf.
I'll be there.
You'll be there.
I have three games this year, so looking forward to Washington State, Utah State. We've seen Utah take some money. They're up to a 3.5-point favorite in that one. I've got the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, where Miami of Ohio.
Are you
going
to get to meet Snoop?
Didn't last year. Maybe this year we could pull some strings and make that happen, but it'll be Miami of Ohio versus Fresno. And then I'll be getting the local game. I got the Vegas Bowl with Utah taking on Nebraska in that one. And so that's one of the bigger spreads of bowl season. That's almost two touchdowns in favor of Utah. So
another weird situation that didn't really get a lot of run. I think it kind of got like covered up because of all the other stories that were going on. Arizona State and Duke in the Sun Bowl down in El Paso.
Mm-hmm.
Kenny Dillingham basically making it sound as if there's no chance Sam Levitt plays in the bowl game. I guess they had like a postseason awards dinner or something with the boosters or something like that. And Dillingham said something to the effect of, and I'm paraphrasing here because I can't find the tweet, something to the effect of like, yeah, we wish Sam well wherever he ends up next or something like that. So I will say I love Kenny Dillingham. Every time he does some kind of media availability, like, he has the right mindset on all this craziness that's happening in college football right now. And he's like, look, I want guys that want to be here. And if they don't want to be here, I wish them well. Like, good luck to them. That's their choice. That's their prerogative. They can do whatever they want to do. Like, dude is such a breath of fresh air on this whole thing. So, I mean, I guess what? Maybe Jeff Sims playing his final college football game at the age of 35. So
good. We get to see one more Jeff Sims out there. Mensah, I assume, is back at Duke next year. So I would assume that he's playing in that as well. The day before, I think USC TCU in the Alamo Bowl Alamo Bowl. That game always feels like it's like a really high scoring game. TCU with Hoover, you know, I'm assuming everyone for USC, as long as they have eligibility, is likely going to be back. So that could be a fun one, high scoring game down there in San Antonio. And then I guess the creme de la creme, if you want to say it, of these bowl games is the Citrus Bowl, Michigan and Texas. Texas, Arch Manning's coming back, right? So they're a 4.5-point favorite against Michigan. So we'll have plenty of time to dissect these, get into them. But you mentioned it. We actually have a bowl game on Saturday night, Boise State and Washington from SoFi Stadium. So it starts quick, man. Boise State wins the conference championship on Friday, and they're right back at it with the bowl game on Saturday night against Washington. That'll be an 8:00 Eastern game. Washington right now an 8.5-point favorite against Boise State.
Yeah, I just looked. I have Washington -9 in this one, so you know, pretty close to the market. But I will say that, you know, Washington is a team that I always feel like their metrics kind of look better than their results do. It seems like it was kind of the way that things have been for a while. With DeBoer and with Chris Peterson, kind of all of that, like maybe they're just really good in a role. We kind of talk about the bully role for some of these coaches. Like maybe they're just really good in those types of games where they're expected to win. They're the favorite. They should win. And then, they play maybe closer games where they're an underdog and, maybe the metrics don't look as good, something like that. Boise State, did what they had to do against UNLV. We saw a pretty significant line move in that one as people realized that Maddox Madsen was coming back. And he looked fine. I thought he looked, good enough. So maybe could be a little bit of a higher scoring game there at SoFi, playing on the fast track. But I think I might ultimately end up on Washington here just because I think Boise State, you get a chance against a Power Four conference team, but you kind of achieved what you wanted to already, which was winning the Mountain West title. And then now you've got to turn around quick and play this Washington team with Damon Williams and, a lot of good skill guys. So I think I kind of like Washington in that game, but it is a little bit of a lofty number with that total in the low 50s.
Keep an eye on Jonah Coleman and Denzel Boston, the two pro players on that Washington roster. I would be surprised if they played, but we are in opt-out season, so make sure you keep an eye on that. Damon Williams, though, he's a sophomore, so he should play, and obviously the straw that stirs the drink there for Washington. All right, just a reminder, we've got bowl coverage coming out over at vsin.com. Adam, just remind folks about our bowl coverage and what we have for the people on the website.
Yeah, so College Football Playoff Betting Guide comes out Thursday, December 11th over at vsin.com. You can buy that a la carte. We're offering it as a standalone product for $14.99. Or you can just become a VSIN Pro subscriber and get a lot of equity out of that, including access to our Opta AI NBA and NFL player prop projections, plus everything else that we do over there at the website. But as far as the bowl season goes, so Zachary Cohen and I will be dividing up most of these bowl games. He's my senior editor over there. At least 72 hours lead time on each of our bowl previews. It was 48 hours last year, but of course, with how insane the transfer portal was because the portal window was open, we tried to wait till as close as we could to game time while still giving enough lead time for all the news to kind of come through. I think it'll be a little bit tamer this time around. So we're going to try to aim for 72 hours lead time on each one of these bowl game previews. So you'll be able to check those out at vsin.com. And I'll put together a bowl game hub where we'll have the bowl schedule and then also link to the previews of these games as they get posted. Not to mention all the best bets from our writers, contributors, hosts, all of that for the bowl season.
And just a reminder, this is the last episode. We're giving you a little leeway for the giveaway. We've got the grand prize, the Timmy Chang signed mini helmet. We've added another mini helmet, which is just a cool decoration just to have. And then we've got a bunch of shirts, the Chase Game t-shirts. We've got some larges, some extra larges, a 2X, and a couple of hats as well. It is not the rainbow hat. It is the gold, black and gold hat. But give me an email, cfbpod@vsin.com. We'll do that drawing on Wednesday. We'll email you guys, and I'll try to email you all back at some point here. I'm just putting a file in my email, putting them all in there, and I appreciate all the kind words that have been coming in. And once again, please do continue to subscribe to the podcast. It helps us out big time. And we're here. We're going to be rolling through bowl season, playoffs, tons of content for you guys. So season ain't over, even though it is for my Irish. For Adam Burke, I'm Tim Murray. Thanks to Wyatt and Ryan, our producers. We'll be back later this week. It is the VSIN College Football Betting Podcast.